Can you briefly explain, as a means of background, briefly, why blacks were able to move into white neighborhoods in Atlanta? What changed?
Well, after World War II, there was a housing crunch in cities across the country, just families returning from the war with means to buy houses and a baby boom, a need for houses. And Atlanta was no exception, that there was a high need for housing in Atlanta, especially for African-American populations. And so the city was looking for ways to expand the housing that they could offer to African-Americans. And the city was highly segregated at that time, especially in residences. And so they began to transition white neighborhoods, unofficially doing this, not by law, of course, but transitioning neighborhoods that were white to be black so that they could accommodate the housing needs for African-Americans.
You've divided your study into three chapters: churches that fled, churches that lingered, and churches that stayed.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about those that fled for a moment, if we could.
Sure.
It's interesting that Kirkwood Baptist Church and others made some efforts to keep blacks from moving into their neighborhoods. In fact, you describe their involvement in a stock company.
Yes.
Explain what that did.
Sure. The idea was, if African Americans wanted to buy houses, and they legally could, if the white homeowners could put enough money together, they would buy the houses back to keep their neighborhoods white. So they would create a line, a barrier, a street, for instance, or a park or something, and say, we don't want African Americans to move in past this line. So if they've already moved past that line, we'll buy their houses back from them at a higher price so that it's more attractive for them to move somewhere else.
Was that very successful?
In many neighborhoods for a couple of years, it was. The more neighbors that bought into it and bought subscriptions for the company, the more successful it could be. They could buy more houses. But usually after a year or two, the demand for housing was so high that they couldn't maintain those borders any longer.
White flight, regardless of one's religious affiliation, was and still is to a significant extent based on simple economics.
Yes.
Property values dropped when blacks moved into white neighborhoods. But for a church, the financial loss was even greater, because you're talking about, in many cases, more than one building, which is very large.
Right.
How much money are we talking about back in the 50s and 60s?
Well, right. I haven't calculated for inflation, but back then the property values for many of these churches was up to $1 million. And so hundreds of thousands in most cases. But the example that I use in the paper of Kirkwood Baptist was close to $1 million.
And when they decided to sell out, how big was the loss that Kirkwood Baptist took?
About $600,000. So they sold for $330,000, but the property value is estimated at $1 million.
With the benefit of hindsight, knowing what we know now about Atlanta neighborhoods around town, it's amusing to me. It was amusing to me when I read your study that Kirkwood Baptist and other churches, when they picked areas in which to relocate, many of them picked South DeKalb County, which in a short time transitioned to all African American.
Right. It's interesting because they, a lot of scholarship points to this flight to the suburbs and says, you know, that whites moved directly from the city to the suburbs. Well, this paper kind of provides some nuance to that, and saying that, or shows that, they actually moved just slightly outside the city. It wasn't necessarily that they moved from the center of the city out to, you know, the far reaches of Gwinnett County, for instance, but that actually it was just right outside the city limits, and they kept being pushed out further and further by the continued move out from the city of African Americans as well.
In your paper, you did some research that uncovered what I thought was really interesting: the disparity between the real reason a church, a white church, would flee, if you will, from in town, to the reason they gave.
Right.
And in many cases, it wasn't, oh, we're here now surrounded by white people, which they may have been.
Mm-hmm.
It was evangelism.
Right. So in an evangelical church, the highest priority is evangelism, reaching other people with the good news of Jesus Christ as they see it. So when society tells you that you can't interact with African Americans, or that it's a social taboo to interact with African Americans, you look around in your neighborhood and all you see are African Americans. You see, well, there's no one here to evangelize. And so they would move on to, as one woman put it, wider fields. I don't think she meant to say it that way, but it's kind of ironic that that's the way she phrased it.
not every church was allowed to flee that wanted to flee, which is a strange way to put it. But in some instances, you point out that a denomination's governing body would put the brakes on a church that wanted to get out of a transitioning neighborhood. Presbyterians, perhaps?
Yeah, the Presbytery of Atlanta was rather progressive in this. It was just a gathering of the ministers and lay leaders in the area from all the churches, and they were very intentional about making or having churches really assess what they were doing before they left, and actually in some instances put the brakes on the church's relocation and oftentimes sometimes force them to stay where they were with an administrative council that would actually run the church for a period of time and help them bring in a transitional pastor or perhaps bring in an African-American pastor onto the team to help the church to stay and be able to minister to the neighborhood.
The chapter that recounts the experiences of churches that lingered, stayed in their transitioning neighborhoods, paints a picture in a number of cases that the churches were really clueless about how to reach out to African-Americans. They just, and I guess maybe hiring an associate pastor who is black might be a good first step, but that's just really tokenism, isn't it?
Right. In many cases, it was. And that's the thing. Even the ones that wanted to reach out, I mean, it was not widespread that everyone wanted to flee. There were many churches that wanted to stay and just were unsuccessful at it. And so reaching across those cultural differences and just different expectations of what a church service will be like or how the community will function was just very difficult for them. And oftentimes they were drawing from seminaries from their own denominations, and so it would be a black seminarian from a white denomination, and so he was kind of acculturated into how the denomination functioned and wouldn't even necessarily know as well how to do so.
What was the prevailing attitude among African Americans, if we could generalize, toward integrating into an all-white church? I mean, I think as a white person reading this study, I'm thinking, you know, my first thought is, well, yeah, you know, African Americans, sure, they'd want to join your church, but I mean, why would they?
Right. One study that I read of a pastor that was completing his doctoral thesis on his church, asking all of these really hard questions of the people in his neighborhood, found that African Americans felt that they weren't welcome or that it wasn't their place to join the church. And so his church was very intentional about sending out postcards or mail outs or anything like that to let them know, you are welcome, we want you to be here. And after they did that, just simply stating it, it cleared up any misconception that they weren't welcome or that they weren't allowed. I mean, the case was that many churches, even well into the 80s and 90s, had official policies of not admitting African Americans. And so it was the case in many times, so they had to clear up that first misconception if they wanted to integrate.
During the late 50s and early 60s, Atlanta desegregated its schools. It desegregated public transit, forced to by law, although they took the initiative on their own before it became like Birmingham, if you will. And in both cases, the white population did whatever they could to avoid public schools when they could afford it. A lot of parents would pull their kids out of schools that had become more integrated as the 60s went on. I mean, it was just token integration in the early 60s.
Right.
They'd send them to the so-called desegregation academies. When the buses were desegregated in Atlanta, the reaction was the whites just stopped riding the buses.
Yeah.
So if a church is not forced to integrate by federal law, as schools and public transit has been, what's the incentive to integrate in the first place? Why would they want to?
Well, that's an excellent question. I mean, I think the paper shows that in many times they didn't want to. But for a church, and this is kind of a theological reason, that the Bible actually encourages it, I think. You look at Revelation, John's Revelation, and the image that he gets of heaven is one of every nation and tribe and people group celebrating God together in their own way and in their own language. And so if you look at the text that these churches highly regard, it indicates that this is desirable, that this is what God wants for humanity.
On the other hand, a lot of churches were hypocritical then, weren't they?
Yes, exactly. And you know, that's part of it is churches are coming around more and more to this now and realizing that to uphold the scripture that they really highly regard, they need to lay down some of their pride and old ways of doing things.
So ultimately, many white churches did not embrace African Americans as congregants. And those that did try to, in a way, were unsuccessful. Were you surprised by that?
Well, I think I wrote this paper coming in looking for the unsuccess. And I was actually more surprised by the deep struggle that happened between the initial African Americans moving into the neighborhood and the flight. And so it's not surprising that they left necessarily, but what I was surprised by is just the deep moral and spiritual struggle that many of them went through in that time period. And so I think part of my paper is to uncover that struggle and not to say it's just widespread flight happened. Every white Christian was racist and they wanted to leave, but just to show that they really wrestled with these issues. They didn't know how to respond to it. They wanted to respond well, some of them, and oftentimes failed. And so my paper really was about showing just the nuances and the details in these stories as opposed to just demonstrating that everybody left the city, because that's obvious.
Oakhurst Baptist Church, adjacent to the Kirkwood section over on the east side of town, did successfully transition.
Right.
What was their secret to success?
Well, I dug around a long time to try and figure out what happened here. My advisor really pushed me to have some analysis on what happened. Why is this church different? This neighborhood, really, because Oakhurst Presbyterian Church, I didn't have time to write about it in my paper, but also transitioned successfully. And what I found in Oakhurst is that they had many leaders from the home mission board of the Southern Baptist Convention, which is based in Atlanta, or it was at that time. And so they had many people that had been to divinity school that had wrestled with all these hard questions that were just leaders in the church. They weren't pastors in the church. And I've read many books that talk about how it's easier to be a minister when you're not the pastor of a church, because you can speak more vocally about things and not answer to a congregation. And so when you have this high concentration of people that care about social justice within the church, they begin to guide the leadership with the pastor, who also was like-minded, to bring change in a way that welcomed African Americans, that embraced lower economic statuses, both white and black, in their neighborhoods, to make a more inclusive and diverse church.
And congregants who were exposed to that kind of progressivism, who didn't agree with it, would probably be screened out anyway, right? So you'd be left with a congregation that might be more amenable to desegregation, integration.
Right. I mean, that certainly happened in many cases. Oakhurst was not immune to white flight. Many of their members left. But I read about many encounters with their pastor, John Nicol, where he said his congregants would say, "I don't think this is right. I don't agree with this, but I trust you and I trust your leadership. And I want to go on this journey." And many of them, 10, 15 years later, would say, "I'm so grateful for the journey of our church and that I stuck it out and stayed here. Even if I was commuting back, I still went to this church. And I'm now willing to move back into this neighborhood because of the journey we've taken together."
Let's fast forward to 2013.
All right.
Strange phenomenon is happening. White people are moving back into city neighborhoods.
Right.
Abandoning life in the suburbs. Could it be a topic of your next study to look into assimilation, if any, in-town churches now between blacks who live in town and the new white neighbors?
Yeah, it would be incredibly interesting to see. For instance, Oakhurst is one that Oakhurst Baptist stuck it out and stayed in Oakhurst, and now the neighborhood is gentrifying rapidly. They have many young liberal professionals moving back into the city. And so how black churches will encounter progressive Christians moving back into the city would be a fascinating piece to work on next.
Preston Hogue is the author of The Ties That Bind, White Church Flight in Atlanta from 1955 to 1985. Just graduated from Emory University. Preston, it was a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve.